Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. For a variety of independent TV series makers, Duluth, Minnesota is their center of attention this week. It's the locale of Catalyst Story Institute's annual festival, one of the biggest of its kind, maybe the biggest this year. Executive Director Philip Gilpin Jr. joins me next direct from Duluth. Also ahead, Oprah and Apple TV Plus adjust their relationship, a new NFL Pro Bowl format, our new classic trivia question, two prize in play, and John Oliver's Law and Order Disorder. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker and TuneIn Radio, and present on Spotify, the iRadio Podcast Network, and other leading podcast destinations. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Thank you all for joining us on this Monday afternoon. 73 degrees at the top of the hour. And to all of our Jewish listeners, Shoshana Tova, happy first day of Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah 2022. Happy to have you all aboard. We have a great show in store for you over the next 60 minutes, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone, dial in, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe. You're on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio. And we've got our chat room in business for you as well, so use it. It's SimonApple04. That's the name, and you can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. While the program is on the air, as always, you can connect others and those connect to you by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn screen. Follow those instructions. Those will be live with you. Philip Gilpin Jr. joins us live from Duluth, Minnesota, site of the annual Catalyst TV Festival, which premieres on Wednesday. He'll be with us after these news notes. Oprah Winfrey's relationship with Apple TV Plus is taking a different turn. Instead of extending the current multi-year contract, Winfrey will do business with Apple TV Plus on a project-by-project basis going forward. Winfrey's latest Apple TV Plus effort, the documentary feature Sydney about Sydney Poitier, premiered last Friday on the service to rave reviews. The National Football League's annual All-Star Game, known as the Pro Bowl, will get a dramatic facelift when ESPN and ABC simulcast it February 5th of 2023. The game will become a flag football rather than tackle affair, and wrap a multi-day, multi-event showcase of football and non-football skills among the players. Peyton Manning's Omaha Productions will assist in organizing the showcase, with Verizon on board as a presenting sponsor. Now, quickies, David E. Kelley's investigative drama, The Calling, formerly titled The Missing, begins its Peacock run November 10th. Celebrity Family Feud from producer Fremantle will go Spanish language via new Telemundo series Sunday night. Que Dicen Los Famosos will have Rodrigo Vidal as host, and celebrity teams playing for various charities, similar to the ABC presentation. Big Brother gets a 25th season next summer on CBS. Former 24 producers Stephen Cronish and John Cassar will reunite as producers of Barcelona, a terrorism drama series mixing English, Spanish, and Catalan dialogue. No taker yet. Carving by Chainsaw becomes a TV spectator sports Sunday night on new Discovery Channel series A Cut Above. Former Law & Order SVU co-star Adam Beach hosts. And on a sad note, a pair of TV series creative producers passed away in recent days. Zach Estrin from the Lost in Space series revival on Netflix and Mork and Mindy co-creator Dale McRaven. Estrin is 51, McRaven 83. And that is news notes for today. Now joining us live and direct from Duluth, Minnesota, the site of the annual Catalyst TV Festival that premieres this Wednesday, our good friend, Executive Director Philip Gilpin Jr. Philip, welcome back.
Hey, Simon. Good to talk with you again.
And same here on our end. Philip, it looks like your festival, which starts on Wednesday, is going to be your biggest and best ever in so many ways.
Yeah, we're really excited about this year. We have another batch of over 100 new television, independent television productions that are going to be here to pitch and do table reads for their scripts and show their pilot videos. We've got about 40 panels going on with over 50 industry executives that are flying in. And a bunch of general public people that are going to be showing up to see what's the latest and newest in independent TV. So we're really excited about the week ahead here in Duluth.
How many people are you expecting overall?
We have absolutely no idea, right? That's always the great COVID question. We know that we've got about 500 pre-registered badges. We usually aim for about 1,000 people in total. We like to keep it boutique-y and small so that people have the chance to meet each other. It's not meant to be a 40,000-person Sundance or anything like that. But we'll know. We'll see how people are feeling about coming out of the pandemic and coming out and sitting in theaters and watching some great content.
Mm-hmm. These more than 100 pilots, which are being presented either as pilot presentations or scripts or pitches, et cetera, are there any specific trends among them? Let's say, are people leaning more toward drama, dramedy, comedy, more unscripted? What are sort of the trends among the people pitching this year, or the people running pilots this year?
Yeah, it was actually split pretty evenly between scripted comedy and scripted dramas, but I would say that the trend we're seeing within the drama world is definitely towards limited series thrillers and limited series sci-fi projects. Those have been interesting to see those start to come through. And the limited series trend is something that we're starting to see, where some creators are still trying to create these endless story worlds that can go on forever, but a lot of people are starting to focus on, hey, I have a show that really can wrap up in 6 to 8 episodes, and I'd like to find the right buyer or the right distribution mechanism for that show. So I'd say limited series and dramas have been the trend we've seen this year.
Is it fair to say that the pilot makers are getting more ambitious in terms of maybe having, as you mentioned, science fiction, more of an epic feel to them, feel to their wares? Or and is that because of advancements in technology, using computer-generated animation, using matte backgrounds, all sorts of GoPro cameras, all sorts of other tech advancements?
Yeah, there's no question that the increase in the quality of the technology is having a huge impact on the independent TV realm, to the point where audiences now will enjoy and watch independent TV shows just like they do watch shows that are on traditional networks or other larger streamers. So the gap between the quality of what you're seeing on things like Netflix and Hulu from a technology perspective is closing, and in some cases has been surpassed by what people are making on the independent TV circuit. And audiences really don't care anymore today. They just want to see the stories they want to see that talk to them and speak to them. And whether they're watching it on Hulu or they're watching it on a screen here at Catalyst, it's all the same to them. So that's been an exciting trend that we've seen continue since the start of the digital revolution back in the early 2000s.
Philip, thanks to the smart TV set and device movement, which practically 90%, I believe, right now of all U.S. households have, we are seeing this incredible explosion in the last couple of years, especially this year, of new channels, multi-channel bundles. The smart TV set makers themselves are now becoming channel or content makers, as well as channel aggregators. You have Roku now very much in the business as a producer of content. Two of the multi-channel bundles producing content. FuboTV with Ryan Reynolds is setting up a channel. How much of that crowd is going to be coming to Catalyst this year?
Yeah, there's a lot of the producers and folks who work on the shows for those companies that will be here this year. So while we don't focus necessarily on an executive from a big-name company just because it's an executive from a big-name company, our focus is on who are the actual producers that are being hired by those companies to produce shows, and how can we get them connected with some of the creators that have new shows to be seen. So, what we're really seeing here in the indie TV space is a growth of people making content that is speaking to specific audiences. And so one of our challenges to the industry is all these new places you just mentioned that are now producing their own stuff. Sometimes they tend to just kind of go back into the old Hollywood way of doing things, which is calling up their agent that they know at some big agency out in LA and getting the same, 10 types of shows from 10 different people. We really challenge that model and push them to come out and see actually new independent produced shows from new voices. You hear this whole thing about new voices and new stories being needed in our industry all the time. We're one of the only places that focuses specifically on independent episodic content of new voices. So it's exciting. We've got people from 20th Century and some of the co-creators of shows like 2 and a Half Men are going to be here. So there's big names and big people that have been in the industry for a long time. And then you've got a lot of new people, like Janice Park is coming from Onyx, which is a company that's starting to look for content. So it's all over the map, but it's exciting because, as you were saying, content still rules the day. So.
Yeah. And some of these channels, by the way, are also, these new services are also diverse channels. And some of them are trying to become, for example, the Asian American version of Netflix, the Native American version of Netflix. There's a organization we covered recently called Red Nation, which is trying to be the Native American Netflix. There's Chime TV, which is going to be launching before the end of the year, which is trying to become the Asian American channel. And there's also a website called Joy Source Network, which has been doing some original programming, including scripted and as well as unscripted, and they want to turn their website into a channel. Black Oak Television, trying to be the African-American Netflix. You have BET Studios also coming in, the BET Plus and so forth. What about the diversity side of things? Are you getting any nibbles from some of those folks, some of those independent players who are diverse, trying to serve communities of color and the general audience? What kind of attendance do you see them having at Catalyst this year?
Yeah, that's a great question. We are seeing, you know, people from a lot of those companies who are starting to pay attention to the independent TV market to source their content. It's interesting, a lot of these startup channels, if you will, you know, one of the first things they do is hire a development team and hire a production team to go out and source all their content. Those folks are hungry to find the best content that matches their mandate as quickly as possible. So they are out in force and they are shopping and they are starting to do deals. You know, it's interesting that we're seeing some movement, actually, not in the American market, but in the Central and South American markets. There are even Netflix itself, but there are other stations that are actually buying independent TV shows as produced and just putting them right up on air. We're hoping that the U.S. market will start following that trend soon. And then that raises the interesting question of some of these shows are already online and already have garnered large audiences. There's one group of people coming in particular whose shows already have over 1 billion views with a B online. So that begs the question, what if somebody who has a show with a billion views really need a show deal for? And are younger generations starting to watch and find their content in ways that bypasses the traditional TV system and the streamer and the network system? That's a fascinating part of the conversation that we're seeing evolve over time here.
And let's not forget also that YouTube, more and more people are watching YouTube on a television set, on a smart TV set, as opposed to a smartphone or a tablet. We're talking about the annual Catalyst TV Festival. It begins this Wednesday, September 28th, runs through October 1st, this Saturday. And we've got the executive director of the organization behind it, the Catalyst Story Institute, Philip Gilpin Jr., is with us live from where the festival will be, Duluth, Minnesota. He's here with us this half hour. On Tomorrow will be televised. Simon Abbott with you live from New York, where it's 73 degrees at the top of the hour, nice and sunny. And we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. We'll use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. First of three episodes we're doing this week to wrap up your September 2022. We'll be back on again Thursday and Friday at this hour. We hope to have the people behind Paley Weekend from the Paley Center for Media either on Thursday or Friday in our first half hour. Paley Weekend takes place here in New York in Midtown Manhattan, where the facility is located at 52nd Street between 5th and 6th, both Saturday and Sunday. So, again, we hope to have folks from Paley Weekend on one of our episodes coming up this week, either Thursday or Friday. 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific right here on Tomorrow We Televise. And we have some other possibilities that works. Stay tuned to our Facebook and our Twitter feed, and we'll tell you where they are coming from and who will be what episode. So stay tuned for that. Philip, in terms of special guests, you've got quite a few of them along the lines of a David Letterman, a Tina Fey. How will they be involved this year?
Hey, sorry, Simon, you cut out there. What was that question?
You have a number of interesting guests popping up, like David Letterman, Tina Fey, and some others. How will they be involved in the festival this year?
Yeah, we do. You know, a lot of friends of Catalyst have been producers in the TV industry for a long time. So one of the things that's really unique about Catalyst is our community represents people that are young and new in the industry and people that have also been in it for decades and have won Emmys and made stuff that everybody's watched on TV. Some of our friends got their careers starting with working people like David or Tina, and they've reached out to invite them to come in. David and Tina are going to be doing separate virtual Q&As from here in Duluth, so our audiences will be able to talk to them about their careers in comedy, which is very exciting. And then in person, Lee Aronson, who's one of the co-creators of 2.5 Men, is actually about to start a mock comedy writer's room workshop here in Duluth live in about 30 minutes over the next couple of days. So that's going to be, you know, the types of things that we're doing with some of these bigger TV names. And it's exciting to see the connections being made between the independent TV realm and the more traditional network and larger industry realm.
Mm-hmm. You had 40-plus panels taking place. Are anything we'd be dealing with interactive television and how people can get involved with them, especially now that we're starting to see things like everything from interactive telehealth to tele-education or edutainment to maybe interactive programming? Netflix is still involved in that game. Maybe you have adapting video games for television And let's not forget interactive advertising and the Shopify ad movement that Roku is trying to pull together with Walmart.
Exactly. This entire space about interactive AR, VR, XR, Web3, all of it, it's all being figured out as we go here. And there's going to be a lot of conversations happening around that. Central to it is our main sponsor, Entertainment, which I believe you had the founder and CEO on, Genevieve Sears, on your show a little pretty recently. She's going to be focusing on the Web 3.0 aspect and how do creators work in this interactive environment with their audiences. Can audiences be involved with funding and developing shows? If so, how does it work from a technology side? How does funding work? How does the immersion of blockchain change the way that content is funded, or does it? Those are all the kinds of questions that the people are going to be here talking about is, you know, everything from interactive space all the way into the metaverse. What is the central theme of it all? We would say that it's the story world. You have to have a good story. You have to have a good core storyline that can carry and go in many different directions and engage people in different audiences. And we're seeing how technology is interacting with storytelling, and it's just fascinating the things that people are coming up with.
What kind of buzz is there about funding television programming, whether it's doing it through crowdfunding, trying to get venture capital, bootstrapping? You mentioned NFTs, which look like a new starting to get some buzz, cryptocurrency, using the blockchain to help get the financing. What kind of buzz is out there right now?
Yeah, the buzz that's happening in the indie TV space is really interesting. And from a business and economic viewpoint, it's a fascinating story and a very powerful one. What's happening is investors are starting to realize it doesn't take $1 million to produce a really good half-hour episodic TV show anymore. The increase in technology and the way that creators are using it and accessibility, you know, putting more storytelling tools in storytellers' hands means they get to tell their stories better, quicker, and cheaper. So what investors are starting to see is you can make something on a few hundred thousand dollars, still pay everybody really well. You know, it can be union shot, but make a good enough show that audiences will want it, will watch it and want more of it. So that's been the fascinating conversation, and it's why we're home. It's why we have Duluth, Minnesota as our home, which is we've been looking for a state years ago when we bounced around from LA to Vermont and other places. We were looking for a state that could be a long-term home of independent TV production. And we found it here in Duluth in particular. The city, the county, and the state have all gotten on board and supported this industry with millions of dollars of tax credits and rebates and incentives and training programs so that now people can come to Duluth or be from Minnesota, and it's economically viable to shoot a really high quality production here, and that attracts investment, which leads to economic activity on the ground and job growth and all the good things that states should be wanting to have. So that's the trend we're seeing, is making better things cheaper, and investors like that.
Mm-hmm. Any success stories from last year, TV series pilots or scripts or pitches that have become successful in one way or another for the creators?
There are, yeah, two right off the top of my head. One of the shows that won an award last year is currently in development with one of the production companies at FX. So that may end up on broadcast TV soon. And another success story, the show that won the best comedy script last year named Canusa Street came here, met the people on the ground, saw the locations in Duluth, was able to pull together financing and funding and using the incentives, and they came back and they shot the pilot over the spring and summer, and they're going to be debuting it soon. So we saw the full circle success story happen from a creator from New Jersey and New York who came out, used to work at late night over at NBC as a writer in the writer's room there, had his own show and was able to produce and get the whole thing done here in Minnesota because of the contacts and the award that he won at Catalyst last year.
Mm-hmm. By the way, you're not far from Chicago, which is becoming a robust area of TV production because of the Dick Wolf Chicago shows on NBC, just started their latest season last week. Are you getting any nibbles from that community as well as the community in Wisconsin and maybe other neighboring states about hooking up with what you're doing?
Yeah, it's been a real exciting growth of content and production and the whole conversation here in the Midwest. But Minnesota is definitely leading this region outside of Chicago. But we've been having some great conversations with folks from the Chicago market who are looking to expand, and they've got their eye on Duluth. One gentleman, Ted Riley, who's the executive director over at the Chicago Media Angels, which is a major group that funds productions, has been making multiple trips here to Duluth, and we've been talking about how they could potentially expand what they do into the Minnesota market. And even beyond that, the sound stages and the spaces that they've been building out in Chicago, we are using as models for potential soundstage production here in Minnesota. So we're seeing the rise of the Midwest back into the industry again. And really for one simple reason, a lot of really good talent comes from places like Minnesota. It's just that in the past, they had to move to LA or New York because that's where the work was. But now that the work is starting to stay closer to home, they can stay closer to home as well. And that means that there's good productions happening, which attracts more people to come in. So you're starting to see that reversal out of the cities and into more places around the country.
You're hearing Philip Gilpin Jr. live from Duluth, Minnesota. He's the executive director of the Catalyst Story Institute, whose annual TV festival begins on Wednesday, runs through Saturday. And we will talk to him in a moment about the future of the TV festival circuit. There's some good things happening, and there's not some good things happening. We'll get into that in a little bit. And we want to hear from you on this edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom Knapp, I'm with you live from New Weber, York. Have a question or comment, my name is with Philip. Make the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Coming up our next half hour, brand new classic trivia question. We're going to go for two winners in a row. We had a winner from Oregon last week, so we have a brand new question and two prizes in play, including our first ebook. Also, in our up segment, we'll focus on Unchained. That's the vegan network, and over the weekend, they had a big breakthrough, their first ever cooking competition show, which got a special screening in L.A. and premiered on the network this weekend. More about that. And also, I'll have a commentary about John Oliver's notorious Law and Order edition of Last Week Tonight. I have a few things to say about it. And Mr. Oliver and crew, not very happy things. We'll explain. That's all coming up in our next half hour. And by the way, on Wednesday, I'll be joining the folks at Sports Grid Network for another episode of Sports News Wire. That's their daily sports information show, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. I'll be there around the 2:45 section of the show. That's 2:45 Eastern, 11:45 a.m. Pacific. At Sports News Wire, Wednesday, right there on Sports Grid Network, available on smart TV sets and smart devices. Philip, it seems right now that the TV festival circuit is sort of in a bit of interesting times post-pandemic. Your festival is doing well. Sirius Fest had a great post-pandemic festival earlier this year in Denver. You got ATX in Austin, Texas. ATV in Atlanta, Georgia. And on the flip side of the coin, still no New York Television Festival 4 years after the last one, North Fork, which was supposed to be this month. It's going to be a one-day festival in October in Long Island. We don't know whether we have another New York festival. There still is no Los Angeles TV Festival, though Dance with Films has been showing TV pilots. Other film festivals like Bentonville, Gina Davis's event, they're showing TV pilots. Other ones are doing it. What's your sense of the TV festival scene as we see it now?
Yeah, it's a great question. So our organization was started in 2006. We are one of the, if not the oldest and longest running consecutive independent TV festival in the country. And the simple reason is TV festivals are hard. And the reason that they're hard is they're different from film festivals. When you bring a project to a film festival, you are showing a completed project for sale. When you bring a project to a TV festival, you're showing an uncompleted idea that can potentially be turned into a concept that could potentially be turned into a TV show. So there's a longer tail involved with independent TV where there are relationships that started 4 or 5 years ago at our festival that are just now coming to fruition because of the nature of the TV development process. So because of that, you don't get the quick hits like you do at a film festival where you're able to go to a Sundance and say, oh, this, you know, Netflix spent $20 million buying this movie and you could get that, you could have that happen to you too because of the nature of the TV process. So you have different people who work in the TV industry than you do who work in the film industry. And that's why a lot of these film festivals that are starting to tack on TV categories aren't necessarily doing very well because they aren't historically involved with people on the TV side of the industry. Plus, there's just been so much changeover at the TV networks and studios during the pandemic that everybody's kind of rebuilding their Rolodexes and connections anyway. But when you talk about filling the void in some of the spaces around the country that don't have access to an independent TV Festival. We're actually going to be making a major announcement in the spring that we're going to be spreading out into multiple cities and multiple regions around the country starting early next year. We'll be announcing which cities those are in April. And the point of that is to give more regional access to what we do. We'll still have our annual content festival here in Duluth. Think of it kind of like the March Madness tournament. We'll have these regional championships, and then you head up to Duluth for the Nationals every year. But that void is one that exists, and it definitely needs to be filled.
I totally agree with you. I think it's a shame that New York City, which has bounced back thanks to the work of Andy Castillo and the Mayor's Office of Media Entertainment, really has brought TV production back in a huge way. I believe there's something like 70 scripted shows alone that are being produced in New York, and we don't have a TV festival. And by the way, Terrence Gray, Aaron Day, anybody involved with NYTVF, if you want to come on this program, let me know what's going on, please do. I'm sort of connected to that because Ned Canty, who was the first programming director of the festival, was our first guest on Tomorrow Be Televised 15-plus years ago in August of 2007.
Wow.
So we owe a lot to the festival
we'll be,
for being on the air, and it's really a shame that 4 years after their last festival, and they had a great run, 14, 15 years, that they haven't been around, especially at a time when, as I said, New York production is coming back. I would love to see the mayor's office get involved, maybe form their own festival. Gotham Week, which was IFP Week, unfortunately, they went backward in terms of using television. They went from 50-50 to sort of more film rather than TV. They had their event about a week or two ago, and L.A. is still awaiting a TV festival. There's a lot of cities that could definitely do it, I think, and it's going to have to take somebody or a mayor's office or or some organization in particular cities to make it happen. Because it's a shame that – and I think Chicago also, by the way, deserves their own TV festival too. So that's
Completely agree with you, and actually we're going to be looking to fill those voids early next year. So why don't you and I check back about that when we make that announcement?
Absolutely. Love to have you back. And by the way, whoever wins at your festival this week, we would love to have them on our show. We do this with all the TV festivals and film festivals that that cover TV. We always invite winners of their TV awards to come on our program. So we do that invitation is open. With so many networks now and so much interest in creating content, Roku is a content maker, LG, Samsung, they're channel makers, which of course need original content. There's more interest with the fast channel movement to do original programming and so on and so forth. How do you see the independent TV movement going from here?
Growing. I think this is about to be, we're about to enter kind of the golden age of independent TV, if you will, for lack of a better term. I think what you're starting to see with independent TV is what you started to see with independent film back in the mid-80s. One of my mentors is one of the people who co-founded what was the U.S. Utah Film Festival back in the 70s that eventually merged with the Sundance Institute and became what we all know as Sundance today. But there was a period of time 7 or 8 years there at the start where nobody in the industry took independent film seriously. They laughed at the notion that non-studio produced films would have any commercial impact. That changed in the mid-80s. I think it was Sex, Lies, and Videotape. When Soderbergh sold that, I think that was kind of what moved the needle there. And all of a sudden, the industry started to realize that there was commercial viability in independent film. You're starting to see that happen now with independent TV because of everything you just said. So I feel like we've been building one half of a bridge towards the industry for about 16 years now, and the industry is now starting to realize they need to build their half of the bridge towards us. And when we meet in the middle, you're going to start seeing all this independent TV content from these creators who are on the ground in their communities from around the world really start flowing into your TV screens in a very quick way. And we couldn't be more excited about where independent TV is headed in the next couple of years.
The Catalyst Festival begins this Wednesday, September 28th, and it runs through Saturday, October 1st. And if you want more details about the festival, you want to check out the pilots, everything. One more thing. I understand that YouTube is going to carry some of it either live or on tape. Is that correct?
YouTube's going to carry – what was that?
That YouTube is going to carry elements of the festival, either live or on delay.
Yeah, we're not too sure. We don't know what channel on YouTube yet, but we're still kind of working that out on our end too. So if you hear, let me know. I'd like to know the answer. So.
Me too. So YouTube, anybody listening, give us a hint. Let us know. But if you want to know more about the festival and check out the entries, And check out the panels, too. Here's where you go online, www.catalyststories.org. That's www.catalyststories.org. The festival begins in Duluth, Minnesota, this Wednesday, September 28th, runs through Saturday, October 1st. And again, we will invite any of the TV winners at the end of the festival to come on this program sometime next month. Bill Gilpin, Jr., the Executive Director, CEO of the Catalyst Story Institute, thank you again for coming on. All the very best with everybody in Duluth this week. I have a hunch it's going to be a barn burner, and I think we're going to see a lot of independent series makers get their big shot when all is said and done. And again, they are welcome to come on this program anytime.
Thank you, Simon. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I will see you hopefully at the next event soon.
Absolutely, and stay in touch. We'd love to have you back when you make the announcement. Also, I want to let you folks, if you're going to be in San Francisco, Philip and crew will be at Tracy Swedlow's Return of the TV of Tomorrow show in San Francisco in October, in about 2 weeks. Check it out, tvot.com. Philip, take care. All the greatest.
Thanks. You as well, my friend. Talk to you soon.
You got it. Take care. Philip Gilpin, Jr., joining us live from Duluth, Minnesota, the site of the Catalyst Story Institute's annual TV festival. When we come back, our new classic trivia question, two prizes in play in our up segment, the latest on the Unchained Vegan Network, and then John Oliver and his Law and Order Disorder episode of Last Week Tonight. I have some big thoughts about that. That's all coming up after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tunes.com. Together, we reach over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you want a different kind of music radio experience, check out the Hilltop Radio Show tonight on BTR. It's 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, the Hilltop Radio Show right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best to be charged 24/7 at youtube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised for this Monday, which is the last Monday of September 2022. Sound I'm with you live from New York, 73 degrees at the bottom of the hour. Lots to get to this half hour, including a special commentary on the controversial Last Week Tonight episode by John Oliver of Law and Order. And in our up segment, Unchained, the vegan network, they had a big breakthrough over this weekend in L.A. and on their air. More about that, as I said, in our up segment. First, time for our classic trivia segment. We had a big winner last week from Astoria, Oregon, won three prizes. And so we have a brand new question in store for you this afternoon. And you could become our second weekly winner in a row. And if you do, we have two great prizes for you. They're both books. One is Flirting with Fame. We offered it as our prize in the last 2 months or so. We have a brand new copy of it. It's the wonderful book about life in Hollywood by the entertainment PR guru Dan Harari. And for the very first time ever, we are offering an e-book. Earlier this year, you met Randy Dawn, wonderful person around the world of entertainment. She has just come out with a new book called Tune In Tomorrow. And we're going to offer it as an ebook if you are the answerer to this question. Here we go. What 1971 CBS series featured David Janssen, that's The Fugitive, Richard Diamond, Harry O, as a government agent? What 1971 CBS series featured David Janssen as a government agent? Give you a hint. The show was produced by Jack Webb of Dragnet fame. Once again, what 1971 CBS series featured David Janssen as a government agent? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and your mailing address when you email. And if you're first with the correct answer, you win. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we will post the question tomorrow on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to get in. So do so. And all the very best. One more time, here's the question. What 1971 CBS series featured David Janssen as a government agent? Good luck to all. Now time for Up with an Update, where we catch up on guests and topics we have featured on this program. Near the start of the year, we showcased a new network at the time called Unchained. Originally, it was a website. Then it became a 24/7 service. It was all about news involving the vegan side of life, whether it was cooking, plants, all sorts of great stuff. We had Jane Bellis Mitchell, the founder of the network. Some of you in New York know her as the former correspondent at WCBS-TV. Later became an anchor and a host at Headline News, and now she is running this channel. Well, over the weekend, an interesting new show, one of the first long-form shows that Unchained has done, had a special screening at the Directors School of America Theater in Los Angeles, then premiered 24 hours later. The program is called Peeled, and it's a vegan cooking competition show where everybody involved, the cast, the host, the producers, the directors, et cetera, all are celebrated vegan people. And the way it works, of course, is it's trying to use vegan products to make great dishes. The screening took place on Saturday. It was red carpet, Directors Guild of America Theater in L.A., and then 24 hours later, it appeared on Unchained. And incidentally, Unchained TV is now running on Amazon Fire TV. It's running on Roku and also Apple TV, and will be on other smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles in the near future. So congratulations to Unchained and Jane Douglas Mitchell and the crew for having a new breakthrough with her network, with the premiere first in public in Los Angeles, then on her network in Peel. So by the way, if you want to know more about Unchained, the show Peeled, first of all, let me give you a website you can you can see. It's peeledshow.com. That's peeledshow.com. And you can also probably link from there to Unchained TV's website as well. So unchainedtv.com or .org. That's unchainedtv.com or .org. And congratulations again to James Ellis Mitchell and everybody involved in Peeled for having that wonderful. And now a comment. This past 9/11 night, that's an interesting tongue twister. This past 9/11 night, John Oliver's Last Week Tonight Show, which won the Emmy Award in its category, did an episode, devoted the entire episode to a critique on Law and Order, one of the longest running shows in television, and also the Law and Order franchise, which spun off Special Victims Unit, Criminal Intent, more recently Organized Crime, and so on. When I heard about what John had to say about this situation, I was quite shocked. Then I actually saw the episode, the whole episode on Twitter. And I have rarely seen the kind of show that was done that night and presented on HBO. It was like the sky is falling, Law and Order has become in one swoop a national crisis, and oh my God, the world is in terrible shape. The way John Oliver is talking about Law and Order and how bad it was and all the negative implications of the show over its run and its spinoffs, you thought he was like thinking that the world was coming to an end when worlds collide. He was so hyper, he was so agitated, hysterical, I would say almost three-quarters of the time. And to be very honest, I think this show was a cheap shot. I think it was a cheap shot at Law and Order, at police procedurals in general, and a cheap shot another way, too. And here's how I came to that conclusion. I don't come to that conclusion lightly because I am a fan of John's work. I respect his opinions. I know he's somebody who's an advocate at times, and he can be very, very brutally funny when it comes to some of the subjects. And what hit me when I initially saw the episode was, of all the topics that he could cover right now, of all the issues that really do matter to you out there, why is he talking about Law and Order, a scripted television show, and getting so angry about it? Again, it felt like he was turning this show into a national crisis. First of all, let's remind John and his production team about something. You are talking about a scripted television program, and as such, a scripted television program is not intended to be realistic. It is fictional. Yes, it is based on actual activity. Yes, it involves actual organizations, the New York City Police Department, police in general, government agents, defense attorneys and prosecutors in New York and elsewhere. Fictional, like Dragnet was fictional, like Hill Street Blues was fictional, like NYPD Blue and Brooklyn South was fictional, and Brooklyn Nine-Nine was fictional in a humorous way. And it was like saying that this show is giving people the wrong impression about things. Really? What's wrong with a television program that in a fictional way tries to put a spin about how good New York City police can be, how good district attorneys could be or how they should operate, or how defense attorneys should be. Also, what was amazing was that he didn't really get into some of the things that Law and Order and its spinoffs have done that are good for society. Like, for example, tackle issues like abortion, racism, terrorism, immigration, legal and illegal. And in the case of Law and Order SVU, the ability of rape and sexual assault victims to speak up and not play victim anymore, and to get help, and to be believed, and not rejected offhand. Didn't hear too much from John Oliver about that. At times we talk about SVU, oh, Marissa Hardigate does this nice thing, and she's involved in an organization that helps rape victims and so on and so forth, and encourages them to come forward. And it was still like secondhand. That really wasn't that. What matters is, oh, my God, it's a terrible show. Oh, my God, it shows the New York City Police Department this way. Oh, my God, it shows people in this way. And again, it's fictional. And what it also showed me was that John is, and his folks who put this segment together have not seen Law and Order lately. They have not seen Law and Order from the start. They have not seen SVU from the start and currently, or organized crime currently, or former shows like Criminal Intent currently. John seemed to make it say, well, every episode, everybody gets their man. Or everybody who should be prosecuted is prosecuted. Have you seen the show from the get-go? I've seen quite a few episodes, more than just a handful, of Law & Order, where the wrong person was arrested. Where the right person didn't get justice. Where the police made mistakes. And the attorneys made mistakes, both prosecution and defense. And in some cases, led to them being disbarred or close. Or in the case of SVU, victims who didn't get justice and got screwed by either side of the law or by police. And that's been throughout the run, not just recent years. Something else that bothered me about this episode and the way Oliver handled this was that he used interviews with Dick Wolf, the executive producer and creator of the Law & Order franchise, and other people that were years old. They weren't done this year. They weren't done last year. They were old, way old. And you could tell by the videotape. So were many of the clips. Very few of the clips were from recent episodes. Oh, yeah, there was an episode where Dan Watterson, in his role as district attorney, has his musing about defunding the police. Oh, yeah. That certainly was a target. Had to get that in there as a dig. And then there was the interview from 2 years ago with Warren Leet, done for TV's Top 5. By the way, I've interviewed a number of the executives of Law & Order over the run. I've not done Dick Wolf. I've done Renee Bolser, one of the key producers from a lot of Law & Order's run. Neil Baer, who is one of the writing founders of SVU. Warren Leet twice, and other producers, writers on that series, on Law & Order, Law & Order franchise. The Warren Leet interview, by the way, it needs to be said, was taken semi out of context. Leet was interviewed by TV's Top 5, wonderful podcast featuring the Hollywood Reporter's West Coast TV analyst Leslie Goldberg and Chief Chief Dan Feinberg. It was a great interview. It was done shortly after the George Floyd situation. Leet was a very gutsy interview, too. And, of course, John used that as his fodder for, this is why I say several things about Law and Order. He didn't give the context to this. And, again, nothing from last year, nothing from this year. All way back when, with the exception of the late interview. And if that wasn't enough, there was one more thing. It was presented on 9/11. It was presented on the night, where as part of that day, this city, Washington, D.C., and that airfield or that field in Pennsylvania, that we take one day out of life every year since that tragedy to remember the police officers and firefighters and first responders who gave up their lives, who literally gave up their lives, or if they survived, had health issues for years because they wanted to do the service of saving lives, getting people out of that those two trade towers in New York or the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., and get as many people out who could be gotten out of those buildings after the planes hit. And before, in the case of New York, those Twin Towers, the World Trade Center tumbled. If you saw it, it was like being in a science fiction movie. Still can't get that out of my mind. They did that. It was their choice to do that. And in many cases, they paid the price. And this is how we honor them on 9/11. They can't even get one night to be honored. They had to be put down by John Oliver in this episode of Last Week Tonight on that night. Again, a cheap shot. Now, I do think that Oliver did make a point. And the one point was you have to take fictional television with some grain of salt, no matter whether it's a comedy, a drama, a dramedy, certainly one that showcases contemporary life. They are fictional television programs. I get that point. Perfectly satisfied with making it. The problem was he went way over the line beyond that, and he did it on 9/11. And he made it sound like having Law and Order on NBC or SVU was a national disgrace. Again, I've seen John Oliver work his wonderful work for the most part, and to have him be this hysterical and this, you know, bombastic and this agitated over a fictional television program or a genre of television like police procedurals, it's just crazy. And by the way, John, when it comes to Dragnet, Jack Webb is dead. He can't defend himself. And guess what? If you did your homework about Dragnet, you should know that, yes, a lot of times the police came out looked smelling great, but there were a lot of times when the police did not come out smelling great, that there were victims despite the best efforts of the police. And you talk about that in your show. And the whole idea from what Jack Webb wanted to do, if you read about it, was he wanted to show the police, to show the public what it is like to be an officer in dramatic fashion, that, hey, We don't solve the crime that quick. It takes plotting investigative work and talking to a lot of suspects and examining evidence. And it's often hours and painstaking. What's wrong with that? Again, Oliver made it sound like a crisis. And it isn't. To sum it all up, here is an episode of Last Week Tonight that, A, takes things out of context, including clips, and interviews done way back when, B, makes Law and Order be like, you know, the worst problem in the world right now, certainly in our neck of the woods, and C, doesn't give Law and Order credit for what it has done as a fictional program, which is using its rip from the headlines format to showcase a light on topics, to get a national dialogue going about issues like racism, especially racism in the corporate world or the police world, and immigration, and drug abuse, and the opioid crisis, and rape and sexual assault matters, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, oh, by the way, gay rights. Remember the S&D you saw about the kid who gets pushed over the bridge in Central Park simply because he wanted to be a cross-dresser? How about that? Why wasn't that brought up? That was a couple seasons ago. And a number of other SVU episodes have dealt with issues of homosexuality and transgender living. Didn't see much about that. Didn't see those clips. Or, for example, the SVU episode where after a rape and sexual assault victim is not believed by a jury, she has the guts to do an event with Marissa Hartigay in her character, Leah Benson, and talk to kids and ask the kids to do an exercise where they wonder, like, have you been the victim of bullying? Have you been the victim of drug abuse and so forth? Stand up. And then look around the room and see, hey, you know, on campus, whether high school or college, guess what? You should pay attention to the whole issue about crimes on campus and the negative police attitude toward it. Again, that was a gutsy thing for Law and Order to do, but that didn't get, and that didn't get covered by John Oliver's crew. It didn't seem to me Dick Wolfe and company, 3 weeks after, have not responded publicly. I really hope they do. And I hope that viewers respond publicly, too. That's why I did. Again, I think it's a cheap shot. A double cheap shot throwing in 9/11, the fact it ran on that date. And HBO, by the way, should have had some oversight about this. They should have suggested to John, you're welcome to do this episode, just don't do it on 9/11. Because it's very, very inappropriate. And it was. I like John Oliver. I like Last Week Tonight. It's deserved all the Emmys it's gotten. And because of this episode, my respect for John Oliver and that crew and his production team has gone down quite a bit. And it didn't need to be this way. If they had done their homework, if they had picked the right clips, if they really tried to make their case and do it the right way and not the sleazy way and not the woke way, and I do think wokeness has a bit to do with this episode. Maybe, just maybe, a simple point would have sufficed. But making this a national disgrace was the wrong way to go. I'd love to hear what you think about this. For those of you who didn't see the episode, whether live on HBO or later through Twitter or so, what do you think? Did John Oliver have a case to make, or was this, a cheap shot? I'd love to hear from you. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're from. And I'd love to hear from you. You can also use my website, tomorrowwillbetelevised.onpodium.com. It's tomorrowwillbetelevised.onpodium.com. Love to hear what you think. There's a question box at the bottom of the homepage screen. Use that to give us your thoughts. By the way, you can also use that to give us questions about the show, questions about the world of television. If we use them on the air, you, of course, get the credit. All right? All right. Once again, I want to let you know that we will be on Thursday and Friday of this week, same time, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. We are expecting to have a guest or two from Paley Weekend, the upcoming event here in New York that will be taking place this Saturday and Sunday. Keep your fingers crossed that the remnants of Tropical Storm, what may become Hurricane Ian by the end of today, are not going to hit New York in a major way. Latest forecast is that it's supposed to hit the mainland as a Category 1 hurricane around the Florida panhandle. Maybe Jacksonville is a major target, then go up the East Coast. Right now, the New York forecasts are basically saying if we get remnants, it will be around Saturday night or Sunday morning and then continue maybe into as late as Tuesday of the following week. We'll keep you posted. And again, we hope to have Paley Weekend. We have another other possibilities that we are waiting for confirmations for. So stay tuned to our Facebook and Twitter feeds, and we'll keep you posted on when they will be with us, both on Thursday and Friday show. And again, you can catch me live on the Tube on Wednesday in the 2 to 3 p.m. hour on Sports Grid Network. That's Sports News Wire every day starting at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. I'll be there on Wednesday with some TV sports thoughts. Right around 2:40, 2:45 p.m. Eastern time. That is around 11:40, 11:45 a.m. Pacific time. Again, thank you to Philip Gilson Jr. for being with us. All the very best with his Catalyst TV Festival. Again, that starts on Wednesday, runs through Saturday. You can check out www.catalyststories.com. That's www.catalyststories.com. Again, we will invite the winners of the festival in different categories to be on our program in October. And as you heard, if you missed it, look for a special announcement coming up about maybe Catalyst doing some mini TV festivals around the country. So we will bring Philip back if that happens. And again, we'd love to hear what the story is with the New York TV Festival. Terrence Gray, Aaron Day, you are always welcome on this program to let us know where you're at. And if you can't do the festival for whatever reason, let's try to get the Mayor's Office of Media Entertainment, somebody involved in putting that together. If you came in late on today's program and you want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Remember, a few minutes from now, we'll be on podcast on Spotify, IR Radio's Podcast Network, Acast, Verbal, what used to be called Reason, it's now called podbine.com, Google Podcasts at podcast.google.com, Amazon Music, including digital smart TV sets, Apple TV, iTunes, other places as well. And if there's a podcast destination you love and doesn't take our show, let me know. Please send them a wire or drop them an email. Let them know, hey, or a phone call like, hey, I like our show, this show. We want to see it on. Let me know who to talk to, and we'll strike up a conversation and hopefully make something happen. Love to hear what you think about the world of television, current and future, and our guest today. And how do you do that? Again, you email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's how you get involved with our classic trivia question every week. One more time, here's the question. What 1971 CBS series featured David Jansen as a government agent? Jack Webb was the executive producer on it as well. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget, you can also find me on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon WBT, and LinkedIn at Simon Applebaum as well. We always love hearing from you. We respond to your way if you have to stay within 24 hours after you get me the communication. And we do that because we know how busy you are, how great you are. And remember, we do it because of another thing. What you say matters. Now more than ever, believe it. The views expressed here are those of the participants. They are not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Cho is BTR's general manager. Dave Sonnenberg is head of content. Website service provided by On Podium, the internet's new podcast outpost. Guitarist Vegas is our web coordinator. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your Monday. For all of our Jewish listeners, a very L'Shana Tova to you. Start of your High Holy Days. Night number two coming up tonight. We're in day one. Second day is tomorrow. And don't forget, Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, is a week from tomorrow night going into Wednesday. We'll be back on Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. Don't forget, Beyond Sports Newswire, that's Wednesday, 2 to 3 p.m. hour, Eastern, 11 a.m. to noon hour Pacific, on Sports Grid, that's available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Whatever you're doing between now and Thursday, please make it safe and great. If you haven't been vaccinated, more important than ever, see your doctor. Find out about all the alternative treatments available to you beyond shots and boosters, and of course, make a great choice, your choice. Don't forget, the Merck and Pfizer pills, they're available in many cases without a prescription, in many cases free of charge, and they're available in a pharmacy near you. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.